This is a production of Cornell University.
GPSA Advisory Body Meeting, April 5th, 2010.
President David Scorton and Vice President Susan Murphy. We will also discuss three resolutions, Resolution 14, 16, and 17, and we will be voting on the new voting body members for next year. There will be presentations about the student trustees elections, upcoming elections, and I think I covered everything. Okay. Thank you all. It's been great serving you. I just want to say that more from a personal level because this will be the last meeting that I chair, and I really appreciate your involvement this year. It's been a great experience for me, and I hope it's been a great experience for you all as well.
Okay. Thanks very much for having me, and I'm watching you eat pizza, which is my very favorite food. And if this is 24 hours later and Passover was over, I'd be joining you. So tomorrow night I'll be breaking Passover with an enormous pizza. I'll be thinking about, I don't know, Trustee Walsh. I'll be thinking about you when you still had a beard in here. So this has really been an extraordinary year up on campus. A lot of hugely difficult, challenging things, a lot of hugely positive things. And we are finishing the year, feels to me anyway, as a very, very close community. With tremendous interaction, don't always agree on everything as in any community or family, but I wanted to first tell you very genuinely how much I appreciate the work that we've done together, GPSA and the University Assembly and the individual members of the GPSA who I've had a chance to work with during the year. I appreciate very, very much. Secondly, I want to tell you again that although some progress on the GCI was slowed down because of the recession and also because of the interposition of other things. I and Vice President Murphy and Dean of Students Hubble and many other people in the administration are very, very committed to doing something to continue to improve the graduate student experience. Just reminding you about my background. My background was not in undergraduate education. It was in graduate and professional education. And it's a very, very high priority for me, and it will not fall off the list of things that the administration needs to deal with. But you can be sure of that. I wanted to talk to you a little tiny bit about the follow-up to the mental health issues, and then I'm going to ask Vice President Murphy, who has supplied the vast majority of the vision and leadership for this. But I want to just give you my perspective. I'm reminding you of my background. I'm a physician, and my medical practice for over 25 years was in people your age, or close to your age anyway, with chronic medical diseases, inborn heart disease, which is very, very common, the commonest birth defect. And we had a lot of experience, unfortunately, with psychological problems that come with bad news and tension and the pressure and stress. And so I followed the literature and had experience with suicides for a long time before I came to Cornell. And I just want to give you a real, real quick 2 minutes, 3 minutes at tops tutorial about suicides. At your age, thank goodness, the rate of dying from anything is very, very low. People have lived beyond the age where childhood diseases claim lives, like childhood cancer, you live beyond that, and you're way, way too young to get the diseases that you get when you're in your seventh decade, like I am. And so you're in that, you're living in that sweet spot of the life cycle right now, when the chances of something bad happening to you are very, very low, and thank goodness, and that's the way it should be. Of the things that do cause fatalities in your age group, the number one is accidents, the number two is homicide, the number three is suicide. And suicides claim more lives in the 15 to 25 age group, which is close enough to what most of you are, claim more lives than birth defects, infectious diseases, including AIDS, cancer, and heart disease, all combined. So it's a rare occurrence to die at your age, thank goodness, but of those rare occurrences, suicide is one of the big ones. And it's a national problem. It's a problem on college campuses, a little less of a problem on college campuses. The actual rates are a little lower than they are nationally, but it's a problem here. And suicide in general is a problem around the world. Most people who commit suicide have an underlying mental health challenge. And I've had counseling in the past. I've rarely met a person who hasn't had some mood or other mental health challenges sometime in their lives. And so that background is common, but it's especially common to those who actually successfully commit suicide. And in addition to that, the actual act of suicide is an impulsive act. And therefore, the two things that are the most promising things in suicide prevention are to have good mental health services available to people and to lower the what I call the stigma for going ahead and getting help. That's one. And the other one is to make it harder to act on an impulse. Those are the two things. And this campus has, for at least 15 years, been a very well-recognized national leader in the big area, and that is the mental health services. But we needed also this time, with the cluster of cases that we had here, to do something about defeating the impulse to finish the act. And two very, very common ways of doing this rare thing, that is, among a low incidence circumstance, of those two common ways are firearms and jumping from high places. Some of the reduction in suicides that occurred in the 80s and 90s, there was a tripling of suicide rates between the 50s and the 80s, and some of the reduction between the 80s and 90s was because of the introduction of antidepressants, and some was due to a little more vigorous gun control and gun background check legislation. So gun control is helpful, and of course that's a big, very, very controversial topic. The other thing that's useful and has been shown by multiple studies is to make it very hard or impossible to get off the bridge, and that's what we've done on the campus. It's difficult to look at those fences. I don't like them any more than I'm sure any one of you do, but it has been shown to be an effective means of making it hard to follow an impulse. And I do want you to know that the last decision to do that was my decision, and so if you or colleagues of yours or friends of yours are unhappy about it, please feel free to have them write to me or talk to me in group gatherings like this. I know it's the right thing to do, and it's a short-term, immediate way of dealing with an unusual circumstance that has to be dealt with and has been dealt with. And then going forward, we obviously need to find a long-term solution that does not involve fences and bridges. And prior to charging the facilities group with putting up the fences, I asked the facility leadership, the dean of the College of Architecture and Planning, Vice President Murphy, Dr. Jane Corson-Reichert, and others to begin to work on what the longer-term solution would be before the fences even went up. They're working on it now, and the community will be engaged in a discussion about what sort of architectural changes might occur on those bridges to lessen the possibility of someone using them to follow an impulsive act. So that's the long and short of it. And I'm very, very, very proud and moved by how the campus has dealt with this and how the students, both grad students and undergraduates, have led us to look forward toward the future. And that's where we are. The last thing I want to mention to you is that we're rounding third base on getting the budget balanced at the university. Budgets will be sent out to every one of the vice presidents and deans in the next very few weeks. And we'll be a much, much, much better situation, much, much closer to a balanced budget. Most of it this time done in a way that's strategic and thoughtful as opposed to across-the-board cuts. And I appreciate what you have done by tolerating us not continuing that reduction in tuition that we had started, grad student tuition, and by your understanding about how other things, especially on the construction and renovation front, had to be slowed down in order to temper the number of workforce layoffs in the university. So that's it. I really appreciate it. It's a, kind of a serious set of topics, I know, but I appreciate the fact that we can come together. And Susan, I'm sure, will have some things to say. And I'm good with you till 6 o'clock. Thanks for listening.
Let me just build on what the president talked a little bit about related to the student health issue to give you a frame of how we have responded and will be responding moving forward. And then I think we should open it up for comments on that topic or anything else that you guys want to ask about or comment about. We've approached this from a timing point of view and thinking about it three different ways. We had the immediate focus of attention once we had news of Matt Zika's death, so that made the third suicide in about 3 weeks. So we tasked or tagged the immediate time frame to be from that Friday afternoon through until spring break. And as you know, we did a variety of things with people on the bridges, opening up caps over the weekend, knocking on every door in the residence hall, getting messages out. It indicated to campus it was not business as usual. It couldn't be business as usual. And how could we get as many concerned adults and students talking to students and heightening all of our awareness? We now have a focus on what we're calling the short term. So from now till maybe the end of the semester, perhaps bleeding into the start of the school year. And the reason we're not quite sure when we're going to stop the short term and call it the long term is because we haven't yet identified what might be some different things we will do at the start of the school year. We believe it is important that there will be some new things, some different things we will be doing at the start of the school year, and we may need the summer to keep our attention on those matters. And then we have long-term ongoing issues. We are using a protocol that is under the leadership of Vice President Opperman and her colleagues who are now running the emergency management structure. And that protocol is what's called an incident response team. So the incident is this cluster of suicides. And when you have an incident like that, you frame a group as an executive sponsor group that where decisions that may require resources or there's a conflict among the incident group, you can bump them up very fast to get a decision. You have a group called the incident lead team that has all of the group of key folks who need to be making decisions as your lead team, and then you figure out what are the task forces that you need for the immediate issues that you are addressing. This with a crisis or a short-term time frame. So David asked if I would chair that short-term executive group, and we've assembled a number of university executives, Vice President Long, Vice President Opperman, Dean of the Faculty, Bill Fry, Vice Provost of Undergraduate Education, Laura Brown, Jonathan McConnell from the Provost Office, and others around the executive group. We have the lead team in place, and we've had four task groups working, one that was looking at the bridge patrols and that sort of people on the bridges, the second about the physical barriers themselves, especially in the short term, the third on communications and particularly communications with the city, and the fourth around student mental health services. And those groups have tasks that they need to accomplish in the short term. And then the executive group is trying to tee up what are the longer term issues that we need to have in an ongoing framework. And if you read The Sun today, David wrote in his column from David around a campus conversation of the student experience and has asked Provost Fox, Dean of the Faculty, Bill Fry, and I to lead that discussion. And we will take many of the issues that we're identifying out of the short term and bring it to that group and see what else ought to be on the list. So what are the kinds of things that are on there? Everything from the academic year calendar, what are the clinical services we have in Gannett, what about the long term issue with the bridges, what should we be doing, and once we decide what, how do we do it, what about scheduling of exams, grading policies, how about advising. The list is actually quite broad and fairly long, and we also are trying to think of it as this not just as a student mental health crisis, although that is our focus, but with an eye towards pressures on faculty and staff as well, because some of those very same people are the ones who want to have help students. And frankly, there's some issues just as we are all facing tight budgets and stresses. So in that vein, I you know, appreciate the resolution you guys are going to be talking about with R14, and I think we've actually made some very good progress working with the GPSA this year around heightening the awareness of the Council on Mental Health around some very specific issues for graduate students, partnering with the Office of the Dean of Students and getting the resources beginning to be framed so that graduate students might see themselves benefiting from those resources because they are more graduate students being involved in the delivery of them. This is a conversation that needs to be had across the campus with everybody involved. Just to underscore the very particular one about the barriers on the bridges, because that's the most visible one right now, it's very important to make sure everyone understands there will be a conversation about what and if, or maybe I should say if and then what, as we think about the long term. I mean, we know that means restriction, that is just obvious, it makes a difference. Most of those studies are done around single bridges in a community. We're dealing with 7 bridges in a very tight-knit area that are predominantly pedestrian. So we've got to figure out what is the right response for our community, knowing very well what the research tells us, that barriers make a difference. But any of us who've been Cornellians for as long as Kent and I, we won't add up our 2 years, the combined years the two of us to put together, but it's like all, okay, just like you can take all those diseases and add up to suicide, you could probably take all of your years here and add up and you wouldn't get to ours. There's no Cornelian who likes it. And yet, there's no question it was what we had to do because the risk was just too great. So as we consult with the RAND Corporation and trying to think through that next step, there will be opportunities for focus groups and feedback, and I just ask that you guys take it seriously, as many of you have already, and give us your best thinking. And with that, I think I'll end, David, and let's use 10 minutes for anything you guys want to talk about.
Well, yeah,
I just had a quick question. So, I mean, I've had given questions with people about the pros and cons of having bridges. Part of it, I mean, some people say that it doesn't look good and kind of memorialize what's happening, drawing more attention to the fact that it has to be done. What do you think about this? I know there's some groups on campus that are trying to sort of decorate them and to make them more sort of a vivid red or to make them more of a positive message.
Appropriate, what we're calling beautification, you know, flowers, ribbons, things like that will be fine. Probably not posters in terms of text because A, that would block the view if you put up big things that are sort of defeating the purpose. And B, I frankly don't ever want to have to get into the business of monitoring content, and that just gets way too complicated. So. The Cornell Police are partnering with us, and yeah, I'm happy to see some of the ribbon and the flowers and some of the lightning of it. Boxer shorts and other underwear.
Bras and panties.
Yeah, the bras and panties will come down. That's just not, you know, appropriate. And we aren't going to allow posters or text, but the other activities happy to have.
Pictures of the three of us are also not allowed. In my case, it wouldn't be considered beautification. So.
If there are other folks that have questions, please go ahead. I just wanted to comment on some of the things that the grad school is doing, specifically targeting and getting input from the grad population.
I have a question maybe you can speak to this as well. You mentioned opportunities for feedback and focus groups. Can you give us any more details as far as what opportunities you will have for yourself?
We don't yet have the schedule, but we will certainly make sure the graduate school and the assemblies know that because we're still negotiating the contract with the group that we're going to be having do the work for us.
I was asked to, and Brian will pick this up, identify 20 graduate students in part of the focus group and it's meant to be broadly representative of the graduate student community. So Brian will do that within the next 24 hours or so.
We're just starting to figure out the details of the work. RAND Corporation is the group we're working with because they did something similar for the military academy quite recently, and so we're going to build on their work. And that's just the beginning of the particular conversation around the bridges.
Please.
Yeah, I think you can definitely sound as well. First of all, I wanted to thank the three of you for taking such strong, decisive action in a situation where we definitely need to see administrative input, you know, take over the school a little bit. My question is, you know, going off on how well you guys have done dealing with issues on the short term, and Vice President Murphy kind of commented on this, not only what changes do you see long term for the university, but what do you see the state of mental health being in the long term as far as, like, you know, I think it kind of took, like, a certain situation for us to kind of get off our feet and take some decisive action this year. So how do you see the university in general dealing with mental health in the future? And then also, I know President Murphy, Vice President Murphy, you talked about the executive group that's going to be working on specific changes. Is there going to be any role of student input on that group? And then I think you can probably tag on this the most. So what do you feel is the situation that graduate students specifically can feed into this new kind of campus movement, so you know, either as being a TA or as being leaders on campus, what do you see their role specifically being moving forward?
A lot of questions there.
Sorry about
that. You know, I think it's fair to say that we have had a focus on health and well-being of students for actually quite a period of time. And you know, even in the Chronicle of Higher Ed article that was at the end of March, where, you know, what could Cornell have done differently, it was kind of nice to see someone say, if every campus is doing all that Cornell is doing, we would be better off. So we have a great foundation upon which to build, but we clearly know we need to do more. We're looking at, and I'll just talk about some of the clinical and the outreach side as two specific. On the clinical side, do we have adequate staffing? We've doubled the staff in 10 years. Every time we grow it, there's more demand. So there's going to be pressure to increase the staffing. How do we take calls in an efficient way, particularly on night and weekends? My personal belief is the night and weekend is an area where we as a campus and as a community, including Tompkins County, have some vulnerabilities. We just don't have great resources in the night and weekend. Are there more outreach that we can be doing? We developed the Let's Talk program 5 years ago. After the last concentration, it's had a big impact. What more can we be doing? The notice and respond that we're taking around to the departments. We just, as a result of this activity, partnered with the landlords and had a hugely positive response from the landlords. And that will now become at least once, if not twice a year, training for the landlords. What can grad students be doing? I think there are, you know, a variety of things. I mean, you are a very important set of eyes and ears for our students. You run labs, you teach discussion groups, you're in our residence halls, and so we need to do everything we can to make sure that in your role as, I'll say, educator, you know, we're partnering with you in the same way we're partnering with our faculty, because not necessarily to be a therapist, but I sure am asking if you've got a student that's not showing up in your section, 3 sections in a row, to let somebody know that and not just assume it's a bureaucratic error. Those are, you know, really important signals. You know, as students, I would say help us help you keep an eye out for each other. Being a graduate student can be a very lonely and isolating experience. I think any of us who's done that, you know that you can get wrapped up in your research, you can get, whether it's the lab or the library, and that's just not a help. Developing a balance is important. So we need you to partner with each other, and then that's going to be a topic on, you know, we're putting to the faculty. It's, yes, you're the scholarship tomorrow, but at the same point, you need to have balance in life. And how do we help that happen? So those would be a few things that are sort of off the top of my head that I would speak to. Kent may have others.
Well, I just make one point. Don't forget that you're one-third of the student body. You're not a small proportion of the student community. And I think Susan and I and David recognize that. We would like to think that we can support you just as completely as we support the undergraduate population. I know for my part, I'll do everything I can to make sure that the students' resources are available to all of you on an ongoing basis.
Just to quickly reiterate, Susan and Kent covered all the things I would have said, but just to summarize them again, we need you to help us with undergraduate population. We need you to take care of yourself. And as you, some of you who stay in academia, decide to become faculty members, don't forget how important this is. So those are the three things that we need you to do. And that middle one of taking care of yourself is the most important. It's corny, you know, but this thing where they get in a plane and they tell you to put your oxygen on first before you worry. In fact, I think what they say is put your oxygen on first, and if the university presence next to you, just let it happen. But they tell you that for a reason, and the idea is you got to take care of yourself first before you can do anything else. So please make that your top priority, being there for each other and not being afraid to ask for help. It's the only mistake people can make.
What I was going to add is, on behalf of the graduate school, spring break, or on the first CGIS of spring break, and began a program to elicit ideas from the graduate student population about how Cornell could help reduce stress or promote a healthier, more balanced lifestyle. We'll go sort of more public with that in the upcoming week to elicit everybody's input, all graduate and professional students. The prize for registering your opinions and your ideas is actually you get to design a recreational TGIF event, either for yourself and your friends or open to the broader public, would be my preference. That's to encourage you to vocalize your ideas. The major feedback that I've gotten from graduate students is that they feel that they are being expected to be the eyes and ears, but they don't feel like they've been trained. So that was a message that I've been asked to bring forward to the administration, either through the notice and respond training that Kinnett does or the responding to students in distress manual.
That's available to all graduates.
And Kent has brought some to GPSA before.
That's a very fair assessment, I think there's more for us to do it.
So through TA training.
I'd say how we can partner with the Center for Teaching Excellence, how we can partner with the department to do their own TA training, to include this as a standard part of what ought to be there. It's a life skill, frankly, wherever you work, whether professionally you're going to be a faculty member, but in any setting, these are life skills that would be very helpful. So,
and
right,
we'd like
point
to partner on
great
this one.
Right on point.
Okay, great. Thank you very much. Are there any other questions?
I think we want to be respectful of your time.
If there are more questions, please write to me. You all have my email. I can put it out there every time I have some. david.scorton@cornell.edu. And I'm very, very glad to hear from you. Otherwise, see you on campus. So how many will I see at the PhD ceremony?
Looks like we have a good cohort for working with you next year.
The one last thing that I would say is we are not forgetting the barn, but don't worry, the barn is not going to fall down in the next 2 to 3 years. It will be there. It's not what we want to do long term, but I did meet recently with Vice President Long to just say, the clock is ticking, and not to panic. It's also the case that it's not likely to be expanded in the next 2 to 3 years either, but we can keep that conversation going next year.
Thank you.
We're not forgetting it.
Thank you,
Vice President.
Thank you for all you're doing at this assembly. I really, really appreciate it. We'll see you around
campus. Let's thank the President for a second. So we got there are chairs there, but there's a flip camera there. So maybe we can move some of those chairs, and people who are sitting on the floor can have a little more.
And we have two seats up here now.
Yeah, a little more comfortable setting.
Okay, before we go on to updates and open forum, I just want to ask anyone who's here for the first time or any new field representatives that are here to sort of take over as replacements for outgoing field reps to go ahead and introduce yourselves today. Asha, if you want to start.
So I'm going to be retiring for policy analysis and management, and Kathy Nicomore is going to be taking over for me. So I'd like to introduce her.
Hi.
Okay.
I'll also be sitting down in a couple of meetings, and Bobby Hartson will be sitting here before the Johnson School.
Leon?
Leon, I represent FIBA, and Duran Sopos, and he's taking over for me now.
Sorry.
Yes, Sarah.
I'm Sarah. I'm from the Vet School of Hands, and so we'll be.
Okay, great. Welcome. Is there anyone else that wants to introduce themselves? I think with the representatives from the Cornell Theater Center. Or
where's
the doctor? Just see you.
Anyone?
I think that's fine. Okay, thank you. Okay, so the first update, the Bring Your Own Mug event is finally happening at the Big Red Barn this Friday. We will hopefully have mugs in hand before then, and I have a sign-up sheet here for anyone who wants to volunteer to help out with this event. I would be very happy to have you as volunteers the day of, just to sort of help promote it, walk around with the mugs, and, you know, just be there that day helping out. So I have three sessions from 4:30 to 5:30, 5:30 to 6:30, and 6:30 to 7:30. And that's about it. $1 of every dollar raised for each cup will go to Gestio in Haiti. Okay. Are there any questions about that?
And it's my birthday, so if you all want to come and get a mug and have a beer with me, that'd be great.
Okay. So I hope to see you all there. So the t-shirt idea is still sort of up in the air. We may have some additional fundings in the communications committee, and we've been sort of playing around with this idea of getting t-shirts. And if you haven't signed in, last time I asked for t-shirt sizes, if you haven't done so, please do so again. And if we do have extra funding, that's something that you'll hear more about. They would be recycled t-shirts made out of pre-consumer recycled cotton. This is sort of the logo that we're going to have the GPSA logo on the front and this on the back. If you guys have any, you know, creative ideas about what you might want to say, besides any grad, any study since 1993, we're welcome to suggestions. But for the time being, we're pretty happy with this. So.
Okay, so mine, I sent a message and Facebooked it and any other place I could find it. There is a the grad and professional student elected trustee position is up this semester to begin for a 2-year term next year. And you can meet the candidates on April 15th from 6:30 to 7:45 at the Big Red Barn. Meet, hear what they have to say, and ask them your questions before elections start. When does voting begin?
Voting begins on the 20th at UAB at 8 a.m. and on the 22nd at 10 a.m.
Okay.
Do you already know who the contestants are?
Yes. nice look, and
we're sitting right here,
Chris. So, the ballot. Now the GPSA members for the trustee spot.
Yeah.
So looking forward to the 15th. My second announcement is based on what Dean Hubble and Vice President Murphy already discussed, the formation of a focus group, meeting the RAND Corporation, talking about our bridges, and I'm looking for 20 graduate students, so ranging from the chairs to the graduate student trustee, any GREs, PhD students, international students, or anyone here that is interested. So at the end of tonight's meeting, if you are interested in joining this group, please see me tonight because I have to get the list together. And with that, that's all for me.
So for me, for the GPSAFC, tomorrow, Black Friday was the deadline for all summer funding and the annual budgets that were going to be submitted to be still reviewed and eligible for funding for this academic year. And then the 2010-2011 annual budgets are due April 30th. If you would like to have allocations decided before the start of the next school year. Otherwise, of course, as always, your organizations are eligible for funding of annual budgets or special project requests throughout the school year at GPSAFC meetings, which are held once a month. The place to apply is at that website, and there will be a workshop this coming Saturday, the 10th, at 1:53 MDR at noon, in which I will go over sort of the guidelines for being funded, what organizations need to do. And also, because the application is once again available online and the form of the application is slightly different and somewhat confusing, I will be going over a tutorial which will later be posted online at this same website for students to go over and see how this application is to be filled out correctly so that you don't have any problems getting funded. And then on May 8th, we have the big funding review days of all of those applications, and the FC is looking for volunteers to come in and help us review all those applications, because we will probably receive well over 100, even though there's only 15 right now. And so we'll need help reviewing those. So if you could get in touch with me, I would really appreciate your help, and so would my committee members, and there will be food provided. So if that's any sort of incentive, I hope it works. Any questions?
I have a question. Maybe it's online, but does summer funding include orientation activities?
Summer funding is from the day after commencement until the first day of orientation. So, sort of, depending on when you're going to have it, whenever your students have to be on campus, then it may or may not. But if you apply for the 2010-2011 budget, it should be, you know, you should be covered if you have both applications in.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yep.
No, out. That what time the May 8th meeting is at?
Oh yeah, the May 8th meeting. No. It's from noon to at the very latest 4:00, and it will be in 1:57 MBR. So, any other questions? Okay.
So there's grad movie night. That's this Friday at Willis Trade Hall. You guys know what that means by now. It's expected for sellers. And the main news is Grad Ball is coming up on Friday, April 23rd. It'll be again in Willis Trade Hall, 9 p.m. to 1 a.m. The theme this year has been decided that it will be Masquerade Grad Ball, which means you guys can go creative on whatever you'd like to do. But we will be providing masks there for free, so if you feel like it's too much work for you guys to be creative, then don't worry, you have it covered. You know what best place is like.
Balance. Remember balance.
The main things note this year are our goal this year was to make $1,000 profit, for which we will put it up into GSJOAD, and we're working with the Big Red Barn to set up an account where we can start a fund called the Big Red Barn Rejuvenation Fund. So it'll be a, sort of like an initial account for whatever graduate efforts there are to raise some sort of money, and we can, throughout the next few 4 or 5 years, we can go towards that. That will hopefully go towards making a better barn for us. Because of that, we've cut down on some of the costs. We will not be having a special graduate student DJ. Preston will be DJing the event. Thank you, Preston, for helping us out.
A good example of that.
Ticket prices will be $15 this year, and they will include free food and 2 free drinks. Is there anything else on the thing?
Do you need people at the door?
Yes, we do need volunteers, so we only have about a handful of volunteers to work the event. If you are a volunteer, you'll be basically working maximum a 2-hour shift, most likely a 1.5-hour shift, or even a 1-hour shift, depending on how many volunteers you do get. And you'll be basically your compensation that you get to the staff all for free, and helps staff in continuing this great tradition that we have.
Do you have to be registered to go, or can you get?
You know, we have to come to the tour. I think the guest can be,
supposedly we're going to have car swipers this year and be checking whether they're both over 21 and grad students.
Okay.
So and I think also,
we'll
be, yeah, what?
So you have to have it.
Yeah, absolutely.
So non-coordinating.
You couldn't bring a case.
Yeah.
Think about that one.
Oh,
those policy decisions must be made. So check back tomorrow.
Yes.
I'm almost
positive. Okay.
Plus one tomorrow.
Plus one will be next.
Yeah, okay. So I think, we'll figure out
there is a protocol due to slope day for checking those folks who do not have Cornell ID, so you might want to think of modifying or adopting that protocol.
We'll work with Cornell or Cornell Catering.
Yes.
Thank you.
Oh, that's my main announcement. So the tickets will hopefully be printed by this week, and so they will hopefully go on sale Monday the 12th, right? In the office of Sunday. So, Amy's up. And the bigger barn. And you can, contact us too, if you can't go to those locations. We will have a set of tickets that we will sell.
And how much will they cost?
$15.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, great.
Also, maybe emphasizing that they usually sell out very quickly.
Yeah, so make sure you get your hands on tickets. I think each person will have a maximum of 4 tickets that they can buy. Last year, I think they were all sold out within a week.
And I had people crying at my door, so please.
And the black market tickets break last year were.
Got mine on eBay.
Thank you, Sreech.
Yes, if you want to volunteer at the GrabBall, please contact me or anybody else on the internet. Putting you in touch with the right person.
Okay.
Any other questions?
Well, we have time. We're running a little bit late on the agenda, and I'd like to just sort of open it up. For everyone, we have some time for open forum. So if there's anything that anyone at all wants to bring up, go ahead, Sarah.
This Saturday from 10 until 4, the vet school has their annual open house. It's a huge event. The first and second years were really hard to put it on. And we have about 7,000 people come through. It's geared towards children. So anyone with kids, I encourage you to come. And if you don't have kids, you can come anyway.
I'll probably be contacting the events committee, but we are going to be looking for more graduate student input on planning and implementation of orientation activities, specifically the ones that are designed to address both graduate and professional students. In addition, or specifically anyone with an interest in the students with families orientation programming, because due to some funding cutbacks and administrative changes, there's no longer a home for the Students with Families programming. So we're really going to need to hear from students that that's important to you. And then the third thing is I will be sending out a notification within the next 2 weeks to recruit orientation volunteers. I know that's where I met some of you when you volunteered in the past, and as well as folks who would like to be trained as Cornell graduate student tour guides.
Wow,
cool. So I'll get that out for GPSA, and then hopefully you'll put that out.
Did you get some of your lifeguard to walk backwards?
I'm not sure that the grad students need to walk backwards. I'll need to talk to Jay Hall about that. But to have tour guides on campus trained, and it would be a paid position. That can go around and give potential grad students a better feel for the university, as well as incorporate some of the Cornell trivia. And
okay, great. Yes, Leon.
Just real quick, the Cornell Public, the Institute of Public Affairs is putting on a panel tomorrow. It's looking at some of the more controversial public policies when it comes to disaster mitigation. It's at 4 o'clock in the ILR Conference Center, and it's free wine and cheese will go along with that if you want to come along. So anybody and everybody is welcome. We're teaming up with the GPSA to do that.
Great, fantastic. Okay. So let's move on to the discussion of the vote of Resolution 14.
So this resolution is the work accumulated by the Ad Hoc Mental Health Committee that was formed this year. So just quickly, the end of last year's GPSA passed a resolution on mental health, calling for a formation of a working group to focus on graduate student mental health. From that, this year we had the Ad Hoc Mental Health Committee formed that Ed Miles was chairing. That committee met with both members from Gannett and members of EAS to discuss how their services are tailored to graduate students. And based on that, the committee has identified several things which are written in the resolution. One, asking for more participation at Council of Mental Health and Welfare. Tim Marshall, who chairs that, who runs those meetings, it's chaired by Vice President Murphy, has already extended invitation to have more graduate students there. So the first part of the resolution calls for a change to our bylaws that we increase the number of representatives. The second thing calls for changing the student advocacy resource list, which is already posted, to include more mental health websites and programs and more information for graduate students. In addition to the mental health information, after consulting with this year's student advocacy chair and last year's student advocacy chair, we decided to amend the entire resource list, so more than just mental health is included now. And the third thing the committee noticed was that there needs to be more of proactive mental health care push on campus, and for that I'll turn it over to Lauren for a minute.
So we saw that there were a lot of preventative services, there were kind of fun activities, but there wasn't a forum that students could go to that focuses on student wellness and student well-being. There's a Life at Cornell website, but it's kind of difficult to navigate. So what we're proposing is a website or a portal that would be a place for students to go to find out information about wellness and different activities that contribute to that. And to make this website, whoever would be conducting research to figure out which programs would be most useful for graduate students. So hopefully that was, by having this website in place, it would also facilitate the data collection process and more research into what graduate students really need.
And the committee reviewed a paper, and I'll go back. It's this one listed here where they listed that for graduate students, finding information on mental health is more of a personal going online, finding information that way. So hopefully between the updating to the resource list, having it linked to various websites on the Cornell website, as well as this proactive site, we can improve finding out information for mental health. And with that, I guess we can open it up for discussion and comments. On the resolution?
Questions for Ryan?
So long.
Or yeah, or the committee, sorry. Seeing none, we, since this is a voting measure, we will move into, Reneal, did you have
something? I'm just wondering, is that a question towards the mental health committee?
I mean, anything about the resolution.
Okay, I don't know how pertinent this is, or if you want to bring it up later, just let me know, but it's kind of, a suggestion from the undergraduates for something the graduates can do as far as mental health is concerned. Do you want me to chip that out now, or do you want me to do it a little later?
That's fine.
You can chip it out, and we'll see.
Okay. So I was just looking through the faculty handbook that you actually sent out for all the TAs, and on page 67, there's a list of suggestions for things that TAs could do as far as helping mental health on campus for undergraduates, and one of them I know is something that particularly affects a lot of students, and that's establishing a formalized mechanism through which students can appeal project paper deadlines. So currently, I forget where it's written, but somewhere it's written down that students can't take more than 3 prelims in a day. They're supposed to be like, if you have 3 in a day, then you're supposed to talk to your professor, and they're supposed to give you 1. I know a number of students that have talked to professors, and you know they've gotten remarks such as, you know, it's more of a guideline, or you know, we don't technically have to, it's not that big a deal, basically, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. I know a lot of students, particularly engineering students, that have classes that tend to overlap prelim periods, and maybe not the same day, but maybe, you know, have 4 or 5 prelims in the matter of 2 days or so, and that's something that definitely adds up a lot of stress. So I was wondering if the GPSA were in favor, you know, maybe Dean Hubble or maybe Amy can comment about whether it'd be feasible to add a section to classroom syllabuses that say that, like, basically how there's something, every syllabus has something on cheating, or what is it, like, student ethics, that there's a, every class has somewhat of a formalized method through which you can apply for an extension for either a paper or a test.
You know, I would recommend that it might be included or might not. What the president has done is he's charged the dean of the faculty, Bill Fry, to put together a committee to look at all kinds of pedagogical practices that affect student stress. And certainly the one you raised is one of them. And there are lots of other ones. I mean, one would hope that in this moment we could understand that there has to be much better coordination between courses so that students don't wind up getting midterms all jammed up, you know, in the same day or the same week. You know, the seven colleges that students take classes in could, if they coordinated things, make it a little less stressful because you wouldn't have this tendency to see things gang up in various moments of the semester. So, I guess to make a long story short, the longer the case may be, I would suggest that you communicate with Bill Fry and get it on his agenda. So you might very well go here, but I think it definitely should go there.
FRY.
The committee will. We're not going to put it into this resolution, but the committee will discuss it at our next meeting. I'd like to make a motion to close debate and move to a vote.
That's in order at this time. Seconded by Representative Sikora. So voting members, which would be the folks with the green placards, and that could be you after the elections later today. So current voting members, please raise your placard if you are in favor of the main motion. If you don't have your placard, just raise your hand. Those voting against the main motion? Those abstaining?
1.
On a vote of 14 to 0 to 1, this motion clearly passes.
Okay, moving on to just resolution 16. Chris Clark.
The resolution basically for the structural changes in DSA that we think will facilitate a more efficient body, one that is better in tune with all its members. And I think currently the structure works against us in the sense that advisory body members may not, and other countries certainly still do not, know what role they play. We really don't have any kind of meaningful voice of policymaking beyond consultation with advisory body meetings like here today. I know I sent a lot of material about, if you look at nothing else, we can look at everything. If you look at nothing else, the two-page table composed of all over, explained all over the different changes, and the pros and cons are re-identified, and some of the comments. The working group that discussed the work how to say, consisted of voting body and advisory body members, we want to carefully address all potential pros and cons of our proposed changes, first members of all parties. Addressing the airplane issue we feel important right now. Concerns are the business spectrum driver, not big changes, we'll do a time on our hands,
yeah.
But just make changes that further, we can serve the commission of the PPSA. I'll summarize the changes and then I'll open up the discussion and comment. The changes we're proposing actually merge advisory voting into one general assembly for all fields, that will be one vote depending on the board in the field. And broadening the executive body officers, including the chairs, and basically clarify the expectations and responsibilities of all the members. Well, if these changes are adopted in 2 weeks' time, when the body considers them, there will be no longer be a bi-party system for one system. That means that there's more additional responsibility to the advisory body members, but also additional opportunity for what we think to include partake in GPSA policy. I'll leave it at that and open up the discussion. Not only here, but also we have a question in the blog. We also can communicate with other members here as well. In 2 weeks' time, the voting body is going to pick it up. So I hope that they can move the comments and discussions right now, especially before it ends. I'll hear from advisory body members. We'll also share colleagues' concerns and ideas and suggestions that you have.
Did any of the other members of the that were on that working group want to say anything?
Oh, sorry, I mean,
first?
Yeah.
Before we open up to the general discussion?
I have one question. I'm Nicole Barrett. I'm a psychologist. And that's what we should advise you about members. In particular, so one of the reasons we're sort of weighing the pros and cons is to what extent are advisory body members who are currently, you know, showing up to meetings and not doing that much else, and do you think you would be more involved, were you to have more responsibility, or would it be too much and would you sort of, I guess, withdraw and become less involved? Because there is sort of a trade-off involved in, you know, to what extent if we sort of open up the General Assembly to give everyone a vote, you know, will that actually lead to, you know, more discussion at the General Assembly meeting? So I guess I wanted to ask advisory body members really on what they feel their role would be if this didn't change.
I read about half of the stuff, so I haven't finished, so I was wondering if maybe you could say, I know currently advisory body members sort of go to like one meeting a month. Did you have any idea how many more meetings a month you might go to?
So basically we do two. So right now we have advisory body meeting once a month and then voting council meeting once a month. But instead you would now have two meetings a month in order to conduct business with the full committee. So it would be two meetings a month. Plus we would kind of expect that advisory body members would maybe serve on at least one committee, so there would be some responsibility as far as that goes. So there would be a small increase, but we wouldn't expect it to be more than about 5 hours a week if we were 5 hours a month. Sorry, 5 hours a month as sort of the minimum amount of commitment.
I just want to kind of that and say that I think 5 hours a month is probably the minimum amount of commitment. You know, a vote you need to be informed about. So it's good stuff.
Yeah. Considered at all reducing this in one meeting a month if you had everyone on the same day? It seems like you have two meetings now, just two different bodies, but all the meetings are the same meeting. Is that an option? Potentially, but I actually think that having the two meetings a month is more of an opportunity. For the most part, there's some challenges, I think, in getting votes through when you realize that there's a limited only once a month essentially available to do a lot of voting on resolutions, and it's easy to really focus on discussion amongst the larger group. So I think actually it's an opportunity to be more efficient about getting resolutions through and increasing discussion.
I can speak to that as well. But Stephen and I were the two that prepared the little summary document that compares us all together to our peer institutions in the Ivy Summit. And Harvard has a system that's similar to what you're describing, where they meet once a month. And what they do, because, you know, if you're meeting less frequently, obviously you can't transact business as frequently. So what they do is they have this, all their members have a vote, but they have these at-large members who are, well, their constitution isn't clear. But basically it means that they end up with a bifurcated system again. That they end up with this sort of group that actually does, the group that does the day-to-day business of their GPSA is separate and one level removed from the group that ends up meeting once a month. I agree they're pros, but I think the cons outweigh.
I think it sounds like a good idea to combine meetings. I'm not a voting member. I've been going to all voting meetings, and I'm hearing the what set of one meeting reiterates to the benefit of the General Assembly, and I think that were the two groups to combine, that meetings will be shorter because the information has to be gone over time.
I have a general question. So based on the numbers here, so we have 19 members of our voting body right now. So we have 67 people filled in the Council of Representatives, or the advisory body. Right? And so let's say, the idea is to make sure that every constituency gets a representative. So let's say for argument that we do get 111 seats filled in this new one body. Do you think that's going to have, what's the effect going to be on getting the actual voting body? I mean, you can imagine raising 111 fighters to vote on something.
This briefly came up in our little over email rather than through. I agree with you that would obviously be an impediment to efficiency. And I believe it's common that something like, you know, what point designing a system that you don't think will ever actually will be actualized. And I agree with that. But that being said, if you look at that percentage build column on the right, Dartmouth is the only one that has anywhere near most of their seats filled. I think that we can reasonably expect an increase. I don't think we're ever going to get 111.
There's nothing going to drop.
Yeah.
And you did discuss the current even in the charter now in terms of getting incentives, even financing, funding, and that kind of thing. Certainly, we'll get everyone together and so I agree with Evan 100% who we are both. We're going to achieve that. You can see on the same here, we're at the lower end of that.
We'll go to Michael and then Tom.
Okay. I'm not sure if everybody is aware of all of what we were discussing, but one thing that we wanted to try to implement is a system where current field members would actually have to opt in to be a voting member. So even though they are the field members, they don't necessarily automatically gain voting status. And so we tried to build in this idea where they had to attend 3 meetings before they could acquire the status required to vote. So, I mean, there's a few reasons for that. One is that it's probably good to be familiar with the business over at least a reasonably long range of meetings, just to be educated enough to have a say in what's happening. The other is that, say they decide not to, they would probably end up with status that's very much as it is now. Only the ones that are engaged enough to come to all the meetings would also be able to have a say. So that would include, I guess myself, and there are many other people here that are not voting members that really do come to every meeting. I think that all of us probably have as much of an idea of what's going on as everybody else that is a voting member, so it might be worth including our input at a level where we want.
There's a lot of comments. I'll just say something briefly. Since the last meeting we had, there's been a lot of new information that's come out, so I really do appreciate hearing a little bit more and seeing more about this. But this document here, I think, is telling, and that is that while we are not the largest graduate student population of the Ivy League, Ivy Summit, we would be proposing, in theory, the largest number of seats by far. And although I do appreciate the comment that actually in practice we will never get there because of this whole opt-out process, in fact, I would guess you would see something like this room here, in fact, as your voting body for next year. Still, I do stand by the idea that if we were to push towards that goal, there is a critical mass at which conducting business is difficult. So I would just echo that sentiment, that we're bursting out of the room here now, and we would have to definitely be thinking about how to handle a much larger assembly in the possible future.
Okay. Yes?
I guess this question is probably directed more at the humanities representatives at MAU. So for me, when I think about the bifurcated system, it's pretty evenly distributed. We have a small number of people, but we have a certain number of seats given for humanities field, a certain number of seats given for professional field, and science and engineering. However, when we look at the advisory body members, where you know we have 60% of them currently filled, there's a disproportionate number of science and engineering students who are filled. And my concern is that the balance is tipped towards science and engineering with folks instead of the humanities. I'm curious if anybody who is here would represent the humanities field, if we get more humanities people here and the balance stay the same, or if it concerns you that maybe folks would be more heavily weighted for science and engineering.
Maybe I'll speak on that. There are 567 students in the humanities at Cornell. There are 1,919 students in the physical sciences field, 1,400 some change in the social sciences, 830 change in the biological sciences. There are 17 fields in the humanities. Currently, 9 of those are filled. So while there are
There's maybe about 28 seats in the physical sciences, and currently low 20s are filled there. And so while I say a greater percentage are filled, I think because there are more fields in the humanities, that does weight the humanities a little more. So I still think they would have good representation. It's just we'd hope to be able to maybe reach out to more fields, diversity number of fields.
Okay. I think actually there's still a lot of discussion or questions, but if you can refer to the working committee, we will be voting on this next at the voting body meeting. So I encourage you all to sort of get in touch with the working committee with your questions, and keep engaging in dialogue, so that we can move on. Is there any final comments from the working team?
I have one comment. Some of you are wondering, well, we're going on board members today, next resolution for it. We will be doing that today, and we do realize that it's confusing. We'll be making members of the resolution happy to come, if it's approved, to come into effect the day the immediate day officers members
June 1st. No, can only become effective after the president has approved it.
But
June 1st on president's approval, I think, is what. If you've gotten it by June 1st, then yes. If you haven't, then.
That pending presidential approval to come into effect June 1st. So those of you elected as voting members today still keep your position. So that we're aware that it could be seen. It's not going to hold up and put them in the ballot. So that's the goal. Pending presidential approval.
Okay. Thank you. Okay, moving on to Resolution 17, I'll actually be doing most of the talking, as well as my colleague Jolion. So we're talking about the proposal of changing the Ad Hoc Committee on Sustainability into a permanent environmental committee that would become a standing committee. Or permanent part of the CPSA. We've gotten a lot of support for it thus far. Just a little bit of history. We started in the fall semester. There was a lot of interest in joining one of the university committees. There wasn't enough space in that. And so we decided to form the ad hoc committee. And we've been meeting regularly to address issues of environmental sustainability on campus. Good. Thank you. As you recall, we passed Resolution 4 and Resolution 10. Jolion will give a quick update on Resolution 4. And Resolution 10 was incorporated into the strategic plan outline. So we see those as two major successes this year. Yes, go ahead, Jolion.
Resolution 4 is about the Project Lifestyle Health, which basically aims to organize and discuss the lifestyle on campus. So far, we've been working with the university to implement a structure to continue this going. The university has been very encouraging for what's happened so far, and looks like they're going to be taking on undergraduate students and interns to implement this project campus wide over the summer and start a campus wide rollout for the fall next year. To date, we've had some statistics on the board. We've had 16 volunteers go around, slightly out of date now. We've only got two buildings that we're working on at the moment, but we've turned off in place statistically 3,200 lights thereabouts over the course of 7 nights. Energy savings is close to a megawatt, which is about 200 kilograms of carbon dioxide that has been emitted into the building atmosphere, and financial savings about $100 estimated. Most of those are Friday nights, and we don't count the effects of rollover off the weekend. So potentially up to 3 times that amount, which I've been telling investors. We're still looking for volunteers. If you want to volunteer, or you know people who've been volunteering, you can go to jump.to/lightbox, you know, get into this website. If you have any questions,
thank you, Jolion. So this is sort of a primary example of one of the projects that came out of this committee, and we hope that this would be the kind of work that this committee could do to continue to serve sort of as a forum where students can come with student-initiated ideas and projects and look for resources and ways to sort of move these things off the ground. Yeah, so this is, again, just a little bit of background. We've participated in various events. As I've been serving as the chair, and as the chair of the ad hoc committee, I get countless emails about events that are going on in sustainability. I then forward those on to the committee, and I've sort of been in touch with a lot of the undergraduate leaders on sustainability and groups like Big Red Bikes, Take Back the Tap. Go ahead, Brian. So that's what we're talking about here. The Bring Your Own Mug initiative was sort of jointly sponsored by the Communications Committee and the Sustainability Committee. We started composting at our meetings, and there's a lot of potential for the future of this committee. And then, like I said before, I've been in touch, and members of our committee have been in touch with various other committees on campus. There's been a lot of sort of information sharing and networking with various campus leaders. And so basically we feel that we would have a unique responsibility within the GTSA. We'd be willing to carry out work that no other current committee is willing to carry out within their purview or within their responsibilities. We feel that as becoming a part of the GTSA, we've become more legitimate. We could work with other committee members, and that would continue the momentum that we've sort of started with this year. Go ahead. And that's all. These are just a few events that we had at the Facebook page and some our blog. And I just wanted to also respond to some of the stuff that came up at the last voting meeting quickly. So there's a question about demand, and I just wanted to say that we do have a lot of support over, I believe, 10 signatures, voting body members, and also members from Against Sustainability Leaders on campus. Some of the questions that came up was, why don't we just work with undergraduate groups? But in response to that, we feel that we are working with undergraduate groups, and that's something that's written into the actual resolution itself. But we feel that we still need something that's sort of graduate-centered. There's been some talk about another larger sustainability committee coming on with campus, but I haven't heard anything about this. And again, this would be something that would be very sort of centered on the work that graduates can do. We do feel that the place for it is a standing committee because, like I said before, it would sort of enhance legitimacy and allow for us to work with other committees. It will serve graduate professionals and the entire student body, hopefully the planet as well. So another question that came up is why not just a sustainability club? And I think I sort of mentioned that I think the place for it would be the GTSA, and also because we have ideas about changing sort of the funding policies or at least trying to work with committee members to incorporate incentives for GPSA-funded groups to act more sustainably. And that's all. Okay, yes. Go ahead, Stephen.
First of all, I would like to compliment you really on all the achievements that you have done over the past year. It's been pretty interesting to watch and also pretty productive. But my concern with providing a graduate student-led committee and actually making a permanent committee of this structure is that it is backwards towards what a normal committee is. For one of the other standing committees, is how does the GPSA engage the Cornell community for the benefit of the graduate student? But this committee will be the backwards way, where it's how does the GPSA engage graduate students for the benefit of the Cornell community? So this will be the first time that we will be opening up a committee to apply for funds for actually benefiting the Cornell community rather than graduate community. So I guess my question would be, how can you gear this committee towards ensuring that it's a beneficial towards the graduate students and not just generally the Cornell committee as a whole? Because there's many other committees on campus that are dealing directly with that.
Okay. Okay, Leon?
Yeah, I guess I completely disagree. I'm completely for this resolution, and I guess to give a concrete example I would see Transportation Advisory Committee lead from the GPSA. So when I met with the Transportation Advisory Group, we talked about sustainability issues and everything transportation. And one of the major initiatives that I tried to get done this year was I wanted to look at possibly getting free transportation for graduate students, which turned out to be an immense task and something that I made really little progress in. But it would have made a huge difference if I had said that I was coming back and doing this through a GPSA, a Graduate Student Sustainability Group, as opposed to just me just being a graduate student and then maybe me being talking to Dan Ross, who's a sustainability coordinator for a separate group. It would have gave me huge leverage to go in and actually have some sort of legitimacy which I think is kind of what Erica touched on a lot, and I actually think that I would have made a lot more progress of being taken seriously if we had something like this that I could refer back to.
Yes. Ed, go ahead.
Yeah, I just want to follow up. So the last voting body meeting I mentioned that in light of the huge demand for university affiliation, so I also said the university assembly. And the university assembly has a university sustainability committee, which its stated goal is for campus-wide sustainability issues. So the university sustainability committee, upon request, now has three graduate and professional students allotted to us. So we're doing 2 million additional seats to do working that. So we have a larger voice there now.
Okay, yes, Julianne?
I have this one question and comment to it. It seems like the committee makes the graduate, sorry, the university, Cornell community. There are a number of aspects about graduate student life that the committee's community to touch upon, such as graduate student orientation, graduate student training, particularly discussed to laboratory students. And just information dissemination among graduate students that isn't presented at our level.
Okay, great. Yep. Does anyone else want to speak on behalf or for or against or voice your opinions on this?
I just am slightly concerned if we try to look at what a standing committee is and limit what it actually can do for the graduate students. Whether it be giving recommendations to graduate students or looking at the graduate student situation and then giving recommendations to campus based on that. I think that in the past we do have committees set forth that sort of advocate for graduate student affairs and certain interests. However, I do think that there also is certain worth that comes out of expanding the belief or expanding what standing committees can do. So I guess it seems like we may be arguing over some organizational issues, which, you know, like in terms of organizational sanity, there's no reason why you can't expand what a standing committee does. However, I certainly understand there are other issues. I just want to speak to that one in particular.
Okay, great. So, again, we will be voting on this at the next meeting, and we also have something up on the blog, so if you want to post your comments up on there, you're welcome to, or you can email me at eg357 with your feedback, or you can email Jolion or Billy or some of the other members of the committee. Okay, thank you. So, now I'd like to move on to voting member elections.
There's a question.
Oh, yes.
Before we go to that, I wanted to go back to... You specifically asked to demand these members. And I felt like our voice, my voice, which I think was taken away by an iPhone. You spoke up, and I'm glad that you did, but also it was a question for us. And so I do feel that for humanity, it often is that someone else speaks for us, or that we're outnumbered, and so therefore what someone else is taking on according to his agenda is important for us as well. So I think what I would say is, if you did have more humanity, if you were to expand in this manner, each person would feel had a vote, I think you would have more of a commitment. But otherwise, now it just feels like I'm speaking for that.
Thank you, Bernina. I apologize. I would have recognized you had I noticed a hand member from any of the committees.
I am getting to be a hand in thoughtful pause.
I believe I did, boss. I apologize, Bernina.
Not accepting it.
With that, we'll move into the elections. So, please, Thank you, Brian. So we have elections. We're going to caucus by area. So we'll have a corner for each group. So the humanities don't think that I'm ignoring them. I'll mention the humanities first. Humanities can go to this corner of the room. You will caucus over there. You will be electing three seats. I believe I have four. You'll be electing three seats. The social sciences will be in this corner of the room. They will be electing four seats. The physical sciences will be in this corner of the room, electing four seats. And the biological sciences will be in this corner of the room, electing three seats. How it works is anyone who is interested in running for a position can make that known to the elections chair. Bernita will be the elections chair for the humanities. Asha is the elections chair for social sciences. You can read the other two here. And so anyone who is I'll take the question in a minute first.
Anyone who's interested in running for a position, make that known. And then to the elections chair, then every member who is a advisory body member or currently elected from your field advisory body member, you will then be given a piece of paper. On that piece of paper, you will write as many names as are seats available. So say six people are running and there's four seats available, you can write down four different names. The elections chair for your caucus will then tally up all the total names. If you're elected, if you're running down four names, they have to be different names. You can't write the same name more than once on a single ballot. And then the election chair will tally it up, and the three or four officers from each of those areas will be the people that are elected to voting council members. Are there any questions? Sure.
There's both trash and compost over there. The compost is the trash.
Now, can I just clarify, when is the voting members, when does the voting start? I mean, in terms of if you, people get elected, they start June 1st, is that it?
If you are elected, your position officially begins on June 1st.
Okay.
We'll also ask all of the people who are elected to be voting members tonight to come to the next voting council meeting on April 19th, because the new voting members will be electing their officers at that meeting. So the president, the two vice presidents, and the four committee chairs will be elected at the
council.
Next,
was it? Council.
And the council for the assembly, as well as the university assembly, the three university assembly representatives. All those individuals will be elected, those 11, at the next voting council meeting on April 19th. Are there any other questions before we break into caucus? Chairs, just take whatever corner.
Two members, voting members for biology, that's Street, Neat, and Billy. So thank you.
Who was the second one?
Yeah. Right here. Yeah. Am I saying that right? Yeah.
Two syllables. Neat.
So this is Neat.
Commissioner Billy. Thank you. Social sciences, we have four new members. Nicole, Ozekia, Garon. Chris and Kyle. Chris Clark,
stand up. Oh. I'm not new. I've been here too long.
Back on the stand.
Yeah. Thank you. Welcome, folks. Mandy?
We have Tom Balsamsky and Evan Horton.
Welcome. Physical sciences?
Okay. Preston. Chris. Ben and Steven.
Which means we do have one seat available for an at-large member. So if you are interested in running as an at-large member at this time,
please. Well, if you would like to nominate someone for an at-large.
Yes, you may nominate yourself or someone else. Thank you, Brian. Preston, put your hand.
I would like to nominate Mike. He is pretty involved and currently in the redrafting of the charter at the moment, and his interests include how to enlarge in the community and basically be a way to make sure that everyone's voices is heard on the current GPSA structure. And then if he has anything to add, he is very vocal to himself.
Do you accept, Michael?
Yes.
Okay. And I'll take 1 minute speeches after we have our full tally of people wishing to run. Asha, did you have?
I would like to nominate Jennifer. She's in... if you don't want to hear the back of my head... she's in city and regional planning. She's worked very closely with Erica this year on communications, and she's very involved in the committee or in the graduate student organization in city and regional planning. One of her big platforms is to get more interdisciplinary, interdepartmental cohesion and work in communication. And so,
can I help?
Thank you.
Yeah, and she was a GPSA liaison to the student assembly, and she's been involved since last August on the GPSA. And so, do you accept? Oh, can I say that?
Yep, sure.
Do you accept my nomination?
Thank you. Are there any other nominations?
Yes.
Are there any other nominations on the floor at this time?
Oh, yeah.
Nope, sorry, no. Seeing none, we'll now close nominations, and Michael, since you were recognized first, we'll have a one-minute speech from you. Why you'd like to be on the GPSA voting council.
Hi, I'm Michael Siebel. I'm a third-year graduate student in the Department of Chemistry, the largest field, maybe the second largest in the physical sciences. I joined the GPSA at the beginning of last year, so I've been a field member for a year, and I've come to, I think every meeting I've been, I've had a chance to come to, and I suppose my interest is growing, and I'd like to become more, have a larger role in participating at some level. I've been on the committee that has been looking at new ways to structure how the voting works, and I guess my big contribution to that committee was suggesting the option procedure where field members could have to spend three meetings at the council before they could gain voting status. That, I think, is a good position to maintain the integrity of the voting body. And with that, I guess I'll just say thank you.
Through my experience in CCR, I feel like I have a pretty good idea of how the GPSA works and both how the GPSA and the SA work. So that would be good for contrast. And, the benefits and the negatives of each, where it's been through. And I went to Cornell for undergraduate. For anybody who doesn't know that, so I'm very familiar with working at the university as well. I want to be more involved, even though I have been coming to both voting council and advisory body meetings since I shifted to GPSA liaison in order to be more informed on what I was bringing to the
Thank you very much. So the Brian has written the two names up here. Please vote for one. And Amy and Yolanda will come around to that green folder to pick up your vote for Brian.
This is fragile.
Before you leave, if you were voted in tonight, I need your full contact info because I'm not going to remember 13 at the end of the night.
You're up to count.
Let's go on. Let's do the executive office next real quick. Let's speak to you about the next meeting.
Anyone else?
Please raise your hand if you're on the top left of your ballot.
Let's go. Remember where you're from. If I missed anyone, going once, going twice, right.
Council ballot for my state.
Wait. Yes, okay, yeah, I know.
So while Amy's counting, I will ask one more time if you are interested in doing the working group for the bridges with the Rand Corporation. If you could sign up tonight, please, or email me tonight. I need to let Gene Hubble know if you're interested.
Well, that's the
So
Folks, please welcome Jennifer to the Illinois Council. And with that, a motion to adjourn would be in order. Okay, we had several, so please join us in our last meeting on April 19th. If you wish to watch the resolution of those resolutions that we discussed earlier this evening, and we'll also have a sort of thank you ceremony with some food and drink available
and
an award. For our individuals involved in the GPSA this year at the end of that meeting. And that's at the Big Red Barn, 537 on April 19th. And again, if you were elected into office on the Board of Council tonight, please join the executive officers up here so we can gather your contact information. And
then some of the voting members will become executive members, so there will be more spots opening up. Potentially.
What?
No.
Sorry
about that.
We'll have elections for two Masters of Engineering students. In the fall.
Yeah.
So those two seats are still reserved.
One image, one non-image.
Yes, two master's students, one master's student. Thank you. All right. Thank you for coming.
This has been a production of Cornell University. On the web at cornell.edu.